Anya reached the resort on the outskirts of town before sunset and parked the truck in front of the office. There was no trail wide enough leading to the cabins, and she wasn't about to ruin the manicured gardens for her convenience. She made a quick check on her prisoner, who looked the worse for wear but in no danger of dying. Then she headed inside, relayed the bad news about Zakarat, made sure someone would contact his family, and then asked about Luartaro. Yes, he'd returned, but he'd gone out again after using the telephone. Yes, she could use the telephone too. Anya retold the story three times before she was convinced they'd put her through to a police official who believed her and who was fluent in English. She was on the phone for the better part of an hour, answering questions and providing directions to the mountain treasure chamber as best she could. She told them about Zakarat, the men she'd tied up, and the truck filled with crates. And she agreed to wait for police to meet her at the resort. They would accompany her and the truck to Chiang Mai, where the department had a headquarters. Anya wanted to go there anyway. She made one more phone call, this a quick one. Since she knew it would be several minutes before anyone arrived, she dashed to her cabin and into the shower, thankful they'd spent the extra baht for accommodations with a private bath. She let the warm water sluice over her as she peeled off the loaned teen's garments. When had Luartaro returned? How had he gotten there? Had he found a ride somewhere? A motorcycle to borrow? Was he all right? He must be all right, she realized, if he'd gone back out again. She turned the knob as far as it would go, so the water pounded wonderfully against her, and she stood there longer than she had intended. Finally, and reluctantly, she ended it when the water started to get cold. She wrapped a towel around her and didn't bother to dry her hair. The other towel was only faintly damp. Luartaro had been there a while ago. Anya padded around the room, seeing Luartaro's borrowed teen's garments folded next to a chair, his suitcase opened and the clothes in it rumpled, as if he'd searched through it looking for something clean to wear. She turned to her own suitcase. There was a note on top of it from Luartaro. He was taking the bus to Mae Hung Sun to find the authorities and report everything. Anya wondered if he'd already met any of the people she'd repeated her story to on the phone. Couldn't the police have told her someone had already reported this and saved her the time? She decided it didn't matter. She'd had to call anyway, just to be sure. And she had the truck and its contents to hand over, along with her prisoner. Luartaro had written that he intended to stuff his face while he was in town and would see about buying a puppy to replace the dog that the gunman had killed in the teen's village. She smiled at that line. Anya was still upset that Luartaro had taken some of the treasure from the cave and intended to tell him to turn it over, but he partially redeemed himself with the line about the puppy.
See you soon. Love, Lou.
Oh.
Love, Lou. Did she love him? Could she love him after finding his pockets filled with pilfered jewelry? Was it true that some women were just attracted to bad boys? She didn't want to love him. Her life didn't have room for such frivolities at the moment. To get her mind off him, she looked through the business cards she'd found in the smuggler's pockets. They were all for antiques dealers. In Chiang Mai in Thailand, Luang Prabang and Vientiane in Laos, and Hue, Dien Bien Phu, and Hanoi in Vietnam. There were phone numbers scrawled on the backs and initials and numbers that had no meaning to her. But the phone numbers might prove useful. Anya dressed quickly in comfortable jeans, a maroon polo shirt she'd worn only once before, and running shoes that made her feel as if her sore feet were in heaven. She brushed out her hair, which dripped down her back. Then she strapped her fanny pack around her waist, made sure her wallet and passport were in it, and that there would be enough room for her ruined camera. She thrust the antique dealer cards in her back pocket, and then she headed outside to wait for the police. Two cars were already there waiting for her. Both had their emergency lights flashing, and one officer had a gun pointed straight at her. Anya felt for her sword hovering in the otherwhere. The police officer looked as if he'd just graduated from high school as he sat in the passenger seat of the rusty truck. He introduced himself as Andrew Stephen Johnson, Born to American diplomats and now a permanent Thai resident by choice. His parents retired back on a ranch in Fort Worth, Texas. He let Anya drive, saying that way he'd have his hands free to take notes. Johnson tapped a clipboard on his lap and pulled out a pen. One of the police cars was in front, emergency lights turned off, leading the way to Chiang Mai. The other was behind her. Twilight had taken a firm hold on the resort area, and with no streetlights, it was a world of shadows with charcoal-like slashes of trees looming up on both sides of the truck. The truck's lights weren't very bright, perhaps by design. Anya fixed her tired gaze on the taillights of the police car ahead of her. The windows rolled all the way down. She tried to take in the pleasant sounds of the evening. Anya had set the backpack with the skull fragments and dog tags in it behind the driver's seat. To her, it was not considered part of the treasure she was detailing to Officer Johnson. As far as she was concerned, the police didn't need to know about it, at least not yet.
That was my fault, really, that Sergeant Rott saw me held a gun on you. I've lived here half my life, and I know Thai and quite a few of the tribal dialects, but I mispronounce a few things from time to time, and was set and Ratsami thought you were some kind of smuggler. Not the one who captured a smuggler. Sorry about that.
No harm done. The smuggler in the back admitted to killing our guide, Zakarat Taksin, after torturing him.
It'll make things easy if he also admits it to us. We have a few men going up the mountain now, if they can find the place in the dark. And those men you said you tied up, they'll get taken into custody. Mei Hung's son doesn't have the resources of Chiang Mai. That's why we're going there, to Chiang Mai. There's a big department there called the TNPD, the Thailand National Police Department. I figure I'll apply someday and work in Chiang Mai or Bangkok. More excitement there. The TNPD is a division of the Ministry of the Interior, and it was set up to handle police duties throughout the whole country. Some folks think it's even more influential than the Thai Army. The TNPD does more than just police the streets and pick people up for breaking the laws. They go after insurgents. Those are people who...
Well, I know what insurgents are.
From Burma, Myanmar mostly. And from what I understand, if there's a war, or a really big force moved in from Myanmar or Laos or wherever, the TNPD would come under the control of the Ministry of Defense and in effect become a second army.
Or how long has it been around, the TNPD? Is this a relatively new police organization?
No, Miss Creed. It's got quite a few decades under its belt. From what I studied, I knew I wanted to be in law enforcement ever since I was a kid, so I read a lot about it. The TNPD was modeled after Japan's National Police Force, pre-World War II, of course. It was reorganized a few times as new ideas were introduced, and the need for specialized training came up, what with international terrorism and such. It's quite the organization. It's all centered in Bangkok, where the big headquarters building is. From there, technical support is provided for law enforcement throughout the whole country. They help the provincial police, the BPP, that's Border Patrol Police, small local agencies, and the Metropolitan Police.
I wish you luck joining it.
Don't need much luck, Miss Creed. Me being so fluent in English and originally from the States, I'd be welcome, able to help with tourist matters and such. I just need to make sure I can find a nice, affordable apartment in Bangkok or Chiang Mai, in a good neighborhood with a movie theater nearby. I'll probably do that come the winter.
When Johnson became silent, Anya tried to turn on the radio, but the knob broke off in her hand, and no amount of fiddling would get it to work. She gave up on it and watched the road as they passed through two small villages, and then entered Mei Hung Son.
You're here as a tourist, right? Did you get to see much of Mei Hung Son?
No, not really.
We're a little less than 1,000 kilometers from Bangkok here in Mei Hung Son. This is a big city. There's 7 districts, and the Muang district, where I live, has a little less than 50,000 people. We've got all the mountain ranges surrounding us, plenty of forests, and the mists. You've probably heard that they call it the City of Three Mists.
Uh-huh.
It's big on tourism. Wasn't really that way when I was a kid, though. More a recent thing. Lots of ecotourism. It's an interesting place. Lots of ethnic groups, including a few American families in my district who work for some tourism company. There are some Shan, and some hill tribe villages are close enough to hit with a tossed stone. The Karen, Lahu, Lisu, Hmong, Lawa. The tourists love them, and the villagers coax the tourists out to see their crafts and watch the dances.
Anya followed the lead police car as it turned off onto a wider road.
If we were going to Chiang Mai as tourists, we would be taking Route 1095 by way of Pi. It's less than 300 kilometers. We're taking 108 by way of Mae Sarayong. They're doing that for your benefit, Miss Creed. It's not near as scenic, but it's an easier drive.
How long will it take?
To get to Chiang Mai? About 5 or 6 hours. Split the difference and call it 5.5. Now, about those questions I wanted to ask.
Johnson reached up and turned on the dome light and tilted it so it lit up his paper.
Let's start with how one woman was able to overpower 3 smugglers.
I think there were 5. No, 6, counting the one in the back.
Would have put him all comfortable in the back of one of the police cars if he wasn't so filthy and bloody, and if he hadn't managed to truss him up so well. Now, 6 men, you said. That's quite remarkable for one female television archaeologist. We get your program in my district, but it's dubbed. Your voice is a lot prettier than the woman who speaks in your place here. I saw the episodes you did on ancient Egyptian mummies being found in Australia, and that goat sucker creature in Mexico. So, 6 men with just 1 pistol, and no shots fired from it that we could see. Tell me how you did that.
Anya took a deep breath and started to recount pretty much everything, including finding Zakharat's body. She left out the sword, of course, and she didn't mention that she'd killed one of the smugglers. That would come out later, and she'd deal with it then. No doubt the fact that she'd killed other thugs in the teen's village would also surface. She'd dealt with such issues in the past, always scrutinized and never formally charged. But the grisly little details about the deaths yesterday and today didn't need to go into Johnson's notes right now. His questions ended an hour later, leaving her 4.5 hours to herself. Anya chewed on the inside of her cheek, the slight pain keeping her awake. She ran the events and discoveries over and over in her mind, trying to put the pieces of the puzzle into place and meeting with little success. They came into Chiang Mai from the south in the middle of the night, and that's where Anya stopped following the police car and took her own route.
Hey, what are you doing?
Taking a precaution, covering my bases, just in case.
Just in case the questioning turned ugly when they discovered the slain smugglers. Anya wasn't guilty of any wrongdoing, but this wasn't her country, and from experience she knew it was better to play it safe. She took a left onto Charoen Pratet Road and sped up. On her right was the Mae Nam Ping, a wide, dark strip of river that sparkled with the reflection of streetlights. She turned on Ta Pei Road and wove around a double-parked truck that was unloading boxes at a nightclub. She leaned forward and looked at the street signs, finding Tud Mai Road and swerving onto it.
Here, let me take the wheel.
Anya ignored him until he tried to grab the wheel. She slapped at his hand and turned quickly onto a side street, heading east now. The police car that had been following her turned on its lights and siren.
Please let me have gotten these directions right. Please, please, please.
Where are we?
Going to number 387.
She picked up speed as she turned onto Wee Chai Anand Road, spotting the series of buildings she was looking for. She drove through the gates as they were opened. The trailing police car stopped on the street. The second phone call Anya had made in the lodge office was to the U.S. Consulate General in Chiang Mai. They'd provided a little advice. Come to them as soon as possible, and they gave good directions. They said glowing things about Thai police, but cautioned that coming to the consulate first would be the best tactic. She knew that this was the only United States consular presence outside of Bangkok. It had originally been a traditional consulate, but was upgraded to a consulate general more than 2 decades ago. She turned off the engine, reached for her bag, and started sliding out. Johnson smiled and gave her a tip of his hat.
Just in case.
Well played, Miss Creed.
The consulate was the base for Department of State employees, some members of the U.S. Air Force, DEA officers, and Peace Corps officials. Pete Schwartz, aide to the consular chief, met her at the front door. Anya gestured that Johnson was welcome to join her. They turned her captive over to the police officer on the street and promised to also give them the crates later. The entry smelled wonderful, of oiled, polished wood and flowers that filled a massive crystal vase. Consulate officials, and with her permission, Johnson, occupied her for an hour, scanning the map from the truck glove box and the marks Anya had made on it. She sat in a padded, straight-backed chair, declining the more comfortable-looking couch on which she suspected she would quickly nod off. Schwartz and the others rattled off one question after the next and took copious notes as she once more related everything that had happened in the past few days and described some of the treasures. Three men from the consulate hovered during the interview, one recording the proceedings.
"We have pictures. Mugshots, in the American vernacular. And we'd really like you to come into the department and go through them."
Anya got Johnson to back off on that count until sometime later, when she could have a representative from the consulate with her.
"Hopefully, we'll have those men in custody by then. The ones you said you tied up in the mountains?"
"You've sent someone up there, right? You told me on the ride over here that..."
"They're on their way. Were on their way around the time we left your lodge, following the directions you provided. Slower going in the mountains at night, but I'm sure they made it some time ago if the directions are true."
Finished with their questions, at least for the moment, Anya requested some time alone. She had a lot of things to do. They let her use a secretary's desk in a small reception area on the first floor. The desk was polished oak, pitted in places, and with rounded corners from being bumped through the years. The chair was much newer, an ergonomic chrome and leather design that Anya settled into comfortably. She could have fallen asleep in that chair, and she would fall asleep if she didn't concentrate on the task at hand. How long had it been since she'd gotten a little rest? She resisted the urge to look at a clock. Her broken wristwatch was in a trash can back at the lodge. She waited for a promised laptop and focused on the items on the desk. A coffee mug was stuffed with mechanical pencils, pens, and fine-line markers. A black plastic-framed photograph showed a young man and a woman sitting on a bench. The secretary and her significant other, perhaps. A flat-panel monitor wasn't hooked to anything. Pete had mentioned the computer being out for repair. A resin figurine of a pug dog with a shiny black nose gazed happily at her. Anya leaned back in the chair and closed her eyes.
"Just for a minute. I'll just close them for a minute and maybe this headache will go away."
Her temples throbbed and her legs ached, but the pain wasn't so bad that it prevented her from drifting off. She was roused by Peter Schwartz returning.
"Miss Creed?"
She sat up straight.
"Here's a computer you can use. We're wireless here. The battery should have enough charge, but if you have any problems, just give me a holler and I'll find a plug and an extension cord. I'll be in my office."
"Thanks, Pete. I'll make a copy of everything for you, provided there's something salvageable to make a copy of."
"I'm interested in seeing pictures of this treasure you talked about. I suppose a lot of people will be interested in that. Coffee? I've put a pot on."
"Coffee? Definitely."
Anya nudged the only empty cup she spotted toward him. She opened up the laptop, a Toshiba with a good-sized screen. Well used, the letters J, F, T, and H were worn off. She was a touch typist and didn't need them.
"You needn't worry about all of this, Miss Creed. From what we can tell, you were the hero. Probably wouldn't have had a problem going straight to the police department, but you were wise to take our advice and stop here first."
"Just in case."
Pete grabbed the cup and walked into his office behind Rose's desk. Anya gingerly took her digital camera out of her pocket. Definitely ruined. Too much water, too much jostling around, and the bullet it had stopped had finished it for good. She opened the catch and carefully extracted the memory card.
"Please be good."
She held it up to the light. It didn't look damaged.
"Here goes."
The card fits snugly in the appropriate laptop slot. Nothing happened for a moment, and she slumped forward and rested her chin in her hand. Then the screen blinked, and a square appeared, asking if she wanted to download all the images and if she wanted to delete them from the source when she was finished. She clicked yes to the first question and no to the second. The screen filled with postage stamp size images of her Thailand trip. The first were of the sky blue bus she and Loire Tarot took to the lodge, then outside shots of their cabin and one of him picking at a local dish that room service had brought. She needed to call him as soon as she sent some images of the skull bowl to the archaeology world. The next pictures were of the cave Zakarat had taken them to, some dim because the lighting was so low and the shadows so deep. But several pictures of the teak coffins turned out remarkably well, showing the intricacies of the carving. Later pictures showed the ancient remains and the intact pots. Finally came the pictures of the treasure. Because the lighting was much brighter in that cavern, all of the shots looked good, though a few had hot spots where the flash bounced off the shiny gold.
Buddha, 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 crate, jewelry, Loire Tarot, skull bowl.
She'd taken 7 shots of the bowl from various angles, and these she enlarged and saved to a separate folder she created and dubbed Macabre Bowl. She intended to take more pictures of the skull bowl shards when she acquired a new camera, but these pictures were more than adequate for what she needed to do right now. Anya logged on to one of her favorite archaeology news groups. Several of the members had helped her ferret out information on this topic or that relic through the past few years. She suspected someone on her list would help with the skull bowl, too. But how soon that help would come was a proverbial crapshoot. Minutes, maybe, if someone was online this very moment. Hours, or even a few days, if they were busily engaged in their own interests. She attached the photographs, along with a brief description of where they were found. Anya did not mention the golden treasure that had been found with it, but just before she hit send, she added the dog tags, but not the names of the soldiers, and mentioned all the dried blood.
Macabre bowl indeed.
Here's that coffee. No cream, sorry. None in my office. I usually take it black. But I have a few of these fake cream packets.
Schwartz sat the mug to her side and scattered the packets near it. He looked over her shoulder at the image of the skull bowl that took up most of the screen.
Rose keeps sweetener in one of her drawers. Is that some of the treasure? Huh. A little misshapen, isn't it? Ivory?
It was with the treasure, but I don't think it's really part of it. Everything else was gold or bejeweled or carved from jade or coral or ivory. This is part of a human skull.
You better make a couple of copies of all that.
Just in case.
Anya slugged down the coffee and pushed the cup forward for a refill.
Do you have anything handy to eat?
I could poke through the kitchen. I'm sure I could find cream there, too. Or I have a box of Twinkies in my desk.
Oh, Twinkies would do nicely. And another cup or two or three of coffee?
Vaughn was a junior college history teacher from Baton Rouge who frequented the archaeology blogs and chat lists on the weekends and in the summer months, calling himself a lurker, but often contributing useful tidbits. He'd helped Anya in the past, but she hadn't heard from him personally in more than a year. He must have been on the internet cruising through the chat lists when she'd sent the images and description of the skull bowl. Lucky for her, she thought. She remembered Vaughn's past information being reliable, though rambling. Surprised and intrigued, Anya read his private postings to her, leaning close to the screen as if she might absorb the words better by a nearer proximity.
It's not Vietnamese or Laotian, or Thai, Chinese, Nipponese, Burmese. It's not Asian at all. It's American. That container you found is American, most likely. At least, I'm pretty sure it is. American by way of Africa. From New Orleans, to be precise. But don't quote me on that until I can take a hands-on look. I saw something like your device, your container, 2 winter breaks ago in a museum in Florida, down by Orlando. They had a collection of shrunken heads, too. But the curators were going to put the heads in storage because a group of locals were picketing and had gotten the newspaper involved. They were up in arms about human remains being on public display. The Field Museum hid away its shrunken heads about the same time. Anyway, I found out that several months later, the head curator in Florida packed up the heads and sent them to Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum that had just opened in New York City, down by Times Square, where they're a major attraction to this day. The museum claims to have one of the largest collections of shrunken heads in America. The heads are the last thing you see when you leave the building. One of the folks at the museum said it was so visitors would have a lasting impression of the place. I was at the Ripley's Museum, too, and saw them. That was just a few months ago when I was attending a conference in Manhattan for spring break. Now, I don't otherwise have an interest in shrunken heads. Couldn't tell you how shrunken heads were made. Don't especially want to know. I couldn't care less about shrunken heads, actually.
You're rambling, Benjamin.
Anya sipped at her coffee. It was a strong brew, but she wished it was even stronger and had a little more of an acrid bite to it. She really needed help staying awake.
Anyway, I was at the Florida Museum 2 winter breaks past because of their voodoo display. Not because of the shrunken heads, which it was silly of the locals to protest against in the first place. You know that voodoo is a special interest of mine. I have a cousin, a second cousin, actually, on my mother's side of the family, who considers herself a mambo, a voodoo priestess. Well, that's not why I'm interested in voodoo, though. I'm just interested.
Vaughn capitalized voodoo, giving it respect. Many of the literary sources she'd read through the years capitalized it, too, just like Baptist, Catholic, and Lutheran were capitalized. Anya skimmed through the next few paragraphs, marveling at how fast Vaughn must be able to type and post. Then she got through his ramblings and to the real attention-grabbing material.
Your container looks just like the one that the Florida Museum displayed. The spitting image of it, in fact. I remember, because it left one of those lasting impressions on me. I found it particularly grisly that they'd lumped it in with the voodoo display. The skull's not exactly voodoo. Not true voodoo, in any event.
Grisly was the term Anya had used when she'd come upon the skull bowl, as there was something unsettling about the thing. She'd been raised in an orphanage in New Orleans, where voodoo was both a tourist concern and a religion. She'd learned quite a bit about voodoo and hoodoo, and had some friends who thoroughly embraced them. Voodoo meant God Creator, or Great Spirit, and could trace its roots back perhaps 10,000 years on the African continent. Those who really knew about it considered the sensationalized tales of human sacrifices and devil worship laughable, and the stuff of bad movies. Practitioners believed voodoo was life-affirming and spiritual, and healing the mind and body was a central message. Historically, voodoo spread from Africa in the 1500s as the slave trade blossomed. Tribesmen abducted into slavery from Africa's west coast, now Gambia and Senegal, all the way to the Congo, brought their religious beliefs with them. In the Caribbean islands, where they were forced to work on the plantations and their owners tried to turn them into Christians, they kept their faith and continued performing the ancient rituals in secret. The term voodoo came from the African Dahomey tribe. When slaves in the New World were threatened with death if they continued the old rites, they found a parallel in Catholicism and outwardly adopted that religion. Catholics prayed to saints, as voodoo believers sought the spirits of their ancestors, all to intercede in their favor to the supreme being, or one God. But in all the time she'd been in New Orleans, she'd never come across something like the Skull Bowl. On one of her forays away from the orphanage, she had hopped on a haunted tour of New Orleans and visited Marie Laveau's tomb. Anya performed the traditional wish spell, turning around 3 times in front of the voodoo queen's grave and knocking 3 times on the tomb. She had wished to be adopted the next day by a nice family, and she left a hair ornament as an offering. The wish didn't come true, and Anya had thought her offering not good enough. In later years, Anya realized the wish spell was only a hook for tourists.
Your skull container might be hoodoo, not voodoo. Or, more likely, it might be from some subgroup that became disenfranchised with voodoo and created a dark offshoot as a way to punish their persecutors. It is dark, Anya, that thing you found. Just like the one in the Florida Museum. Those symbols on the outside, they're a corruption of a traditional ancient voodoo spell. They incorporate the symbols for Kaufu, Papagede, and Legba.
Anya was familiar with the names. Papagede was the Loa of death and resurrection. Legba was the keeper of the gate between the worlds of life and death, and he was considered the origin of life and regeneration. And Kalfu was Legba's counterpart, the birther of darkness, and a dangerous Loa, a voodoo spirit.
Now, the largest symbol on your container is a melding of the sun, the moon, and a cross, the symbols of Legba, Kalfu, and Papagede, respectively. Now, that's why I think it came from New Orleans, because a few voodoo-related cults that sprang up there in the late 1700s were known for corrupting traditional symbols and values. Now, the cults were subsequently put down by the real voodoo practitioners who considered their rivals malevolent and dangerous. I'd set your container at 220 to 240 years old. Best guess, without studying it firsthand. The container in the Florida Museum was suspected to be that old.
Anya remembered that Papagede was supposedly the first man who ever died in the world, and that now he waited at the crossroads to escort the dying to the afterlife. a favorable counterpart to the striking and ominous Baron Samedi.
I want to study the symbols a little longer and do a little reading, but I believe the intent of the spell on your container is to trap the soul of a person, keeping it hidden from Kalfu, Legba, and Papagede. The person, ensorcelled, in effect, never reaches the crossroads and dies for all eternity, experiencing the moment of his or her death over and over and never able to go beyond it. A horrendous torture, if such magical things are to be believed. Something intimate of the person, a finger maybe, or a hank of hair, would have to be sealed inside. Very black magic.
Dog tags and blood would be intimate to a soldier, Anya thought. Anya had written that she found the skull bowl in the mountains in northern Thailand, believing it to be an Asian relic, not in her wildest imaginings to be something from New Orleans.
Amazing that such a thing got all the way over to a remote part of Thailand. But then how do people get from one spot to the next? Planes, trains, automobiles, ships? Maybe someone bought it at a flea market and sold it on eBay to a collector in Bangkok. Who knows? Are you going to bring it back to the States with you? I'd like to take a closer look. We could meet somewhere.
Anya didn't reply to that last question, though she did email him an effusive thank you note and told him the container had been broken and that she would stay in touch with him if she learned more about it. She looked at the business cards of the antiques dealers that she'd taken from the smugglers. Maybe the skull container had come to one of them. Maybe quite a bit of the treasure in the cavern had come through one or more of the antiques shops. There were phone numbers on the back, different than the ones listed on the front with the business name and address. Anya downed the rest of the coffee and reached for two of the Twinkies Pete had dropped off.
Oh.
She ate them quickly, barely registering the taste and craving more. Then she stretched forward for the telephone. But the next call wasn't to one of the dealers or to Luartaro. She glanced at the wall clock. It was 4 a.m., too early to disturb Luartaro or whoever was on duty at the lodge front desk. She dialed Doug Morell and left a message on his voicemail.
They're called spirit caves. They're amazing, and I found one undisturbed with real remains. None of the coffins previously discovered had any bodies in them. As for the monster rumored to be involved, I think you'll be surprised at just how grisly it all is.
Anya intended to start in on the antique stores, calling the one in Chiang Mai first, but her body had other ideas. With the exception of the brief time she'd dozed after Doc had mended her leg, she'd been up for 48 hours. Anya slumped forward on the desk and fell asleep. Someone nudged her gently.
Rose is here for work, and she'd like to use her desk.
Anya got up with a start, a lengthy list of curse words stopping in her throat. She'd had so much to do. She hadn't time for the luxury of a nap, but she had to admit the sleep was necessary. She glanced at the clock, 8:30. She'd slept for 4.5 hours. No wonder she felt better, but at the same time, stiff. Her shoulders cracked when she rotated them. She hadn't chosen the most comfortable position for a snooze. Feeling her forehead, she detected a line across it, a mark left by the edge of the desk. Pete shoved another cup of coffee under her nose.
With real cream. The kitchen's open. Join me for breakfast?
That was an invitation Anya was quick to accept. A short, stocky young woman in a three-piece suit nodded curtly to Anya and took her place behind the desk.
Rose Walters, meet Anya Creed. Anya, Rose.
The women gave each other polite smiles.
Our cook used to work at O'Malley's downtown.
An Irish restaurant.
The best, in my opinion.
Shortly after she settled at the table and was brought a steaming plate of food, Anya thought it was the best she'd eaten in quite some time. As Pete explained about his dealings with the Chiang Mai police, she wolfed down a perfectly seasoned ribeye steak, 3 eggs scrambled with peppers, country potato cubes, mushrooms, toast and jam, fried tomatoes, and baked beans, as well as 3 cups of coffee. P Pete was just finishing up as she upended her second glass of orange juice.
So you're not a suspect in anything. You're a hero, stopping a smuggling operation that has probably plagued this part of the world for quite some time. I got a call shortly after you, took a nap. It was Officer Johnson. He seems quite taken with you, by the way. He said that fellow you had trussed up in the truck was quite talkative. Maybe all that bouncing around.
Maybe the Thai police are persuasive.
Philip came in 2 hours ago and went over to the station with that rust bucket of a truck you drove here. He called a little while ago in his cell. Philip got a look at some of the stuff, and someone in the station told him one piece dated back several centuries and had been reported stolen last year. Probably quite a bit of it does date back a long way. There's been a problem for some time, people smuggling relics from ancient Asian temples and museums. It happens all over. Central and South America had tons of trouble with treasure hunters raiding the ruins. It was in the news. This gang you broke up trafficked particularly in gold.
Wonder if they still need to talk to me.
Philip said they expect you downtown at the station sometime this afternoon. Just for questions. Like I said, you're not a suspect. You're a hero. The local paper will probably want to do a piece.
Fine. Yeah. I feel like I've downed enough coffee and juice to float. Restroom?
Right over there.
And you'll get me a ride to the police station?
I'd be happy to drive you myself.
That's all right. You look exhausted. On second thought, I'll take a cab. I insist.
Anya had a stop in mind before the station. After freshening up, she returned to Rose's desk and picked up the antiques dealer's cards she'd left there and the bag with the broken skull bowl.
Mind if I borrow your phone?
Rose waggled her fingers at it. She was busily typing away on the laptop Anya had been using, but this time it was plugged in so the battery could recharge. Anya took the phone a few feet away from the desk, as far as the cord allowed. It took several minutes for the man at the lodge's front desk to summon Luar Taro.
I've been worried about you. The people here said you had returned and gone out again, so I did not panic. But I still worried. I spoke with one of the policemen, and he said you had gone to Chiang Mai. What happened to you after you left the tins?
Anya gave him a rapid-fire account of finding Zakarat's body and dealing with the smugglers at the cavern, and told him she would return to the resort as soon as possible.
I have to talk to more police today. Just routine. And there's an antique store here in the city I want to...
You think someone there's involved with this? I think I know you well, Anya. You are curious, and you cannot quit on a mystery. My sister would like you.
I have to go.
Take care of yourself, Anya. I don't want to lose you.
When she hopped into a cab, Anya passed the driver the card with the address on it that she wanted to go to. The cabbie took her for a tourist, and when she asked him a few questions about the city, he broke into a clearly memorized speech in fluent English.
This city, it was the capital of all the Lana Kingdom after it was founded almost 800 years ago. It was also the land's cultural center and the center of Buddhism in northern Thailand. Many, many temples were built by King Mingrai. We will drive by one of them. It was a little more than 400 years ago that King Mingrai's dynasty ended and Burma occupied this land. To this day, you can see the Burmese influence on the city's architecture, there and there.
The cabbie pointed to a pair of squat, ornately decorated buildings, one of which looked to be an art gallery.
It was in the late 18th century that King Thaksin defeated the Burmese forces and took back this land. In the 1930s, Chiang Mai grew to be more important when the last remnant of the Lana Kingdom dissolved.
Anya saw a man in a three-piece suit riding a bicycle and balancing a briefcase on the handlebars. 2 blocks later, she spotted more bike riders in business attire. Traffic had been light when they left the consulate, but it was becoming heavier now, and the driver wove in and out of the lane close to the sidewalk. The sky had been a brilliant blue, although it was full of clouds over the consulate. The farther south they traveled, the more gray the sky became.
It is going to rain again.
I wonder if all this rain hurts tourism.
Tourism is very good to Thailand, and Chiang Mai is important to tourists like you. Very scenic, this province, because of mountains, valleys, flowers, good weather. But we are in the rainy season now. So many things to do. Mountain biking, elephant show, trip to Hill Tribe Village. There are many places you should visit. Chiang Mai Zoo has more than 200 Asian and African animals. And Dua Sutep Doi Pui National Park.
I don't have much time for sightseeing.
But you have time for shopping, yes? There is Walking Street that you must visit. A big market opens there on Sunday with handcraft. All displayed and very colorful and very nice. Good price. Silk, embroidery, umbrella, hand-painted by the Hill Tribe. Sapaper, silverware, celadon, souvenir.
On my next trip to Thailand, I'll act like a proper tourist then.
It is too bad you do not have time for seeing sights this trip. There are many caves in this part of the country. You do have time for a little shopping, yeah? The Night Bazaar, 3 blocks long, is good for tourists. Many goods there. Many restaurants.
I will try to visit the Night Bazaar before I leave.
My brother has a restaurant there, Cafe Duan. Very good food. Good price.
The cabbie pointed out a few interesting buildings as he drove south on Sutep Road, one with a massive white structure with ornate steps and roof sections.
It is beautiful.
Part of the Maha Chulalongkorn Buddhist University of the Mahanikaya sect is inside. The Wat is open to tourists.
On my next trip.
So you will do a little shopping.
The driver turned west at the next intersection and slowed. He stopped in front of an antique store. Chanarong's Antiques were the English words displayed beneath the much larger flowing Thai script.
Wait for you?
No, thank you. I might be a while.
If you need another ride, you ask for me.
I will do that. Thank you.
He passed her his card, Thai on one side, English on the other. She handed over several more baht than the fare called for and slung the backpack over her shoulders. He drove away, and she turned to scrutinize the business. The drizzle was turning into a steady, soft rain. Nearby, a restaurant, which hadn't yet opened for the day, advertised lunch specials. The antique shop was on the corner, an alley too narrow to drive down, to its left. It was an older building, 3 stories, made of dark red bricks that had been painted a few times, the current color dark green. The upper 2 floors looked to be apartments, one with a window air conditioner, one with a box fan, all of them with mismatched curtains. The antique store had lighter green paint around its windows and red chipped paint on the door trim. All of the windows were streaked with the grime of the city, but she could see vases, bowls, and wooden knick-knacks through the smears. She also spotted a small closed sign propped up against the bottom corner.
Wonderful.
Anya had thought about calling the store before she came over, but didn't want to tip anyone off. She'd decided just to stop by, as it should be opening according to the hours printed on the card. She stepped close to the door, which had a small window set in it, and she peered inside. The overhang kept her dry, rain pattering against it in a steady rhythm. It was dark in the shop, but she noticed shadowy shelves filled with all manner of objects and larger pieces, chairs, tall urns, and statues lining the walls, all of it too dark to make out much detail. It was not a large store, and everything looked cramped. A curiosity seeker's paradise. A faint glow came from the back, and at first Anya thought it was a security light. But it flickered, as if someone was walking past it inside the shop. And she realized there was a doorway in the rear behind the sales counter, and the light was coming from a back room. Anya didn't hesitate. She headed down the narrow alley, tipping her head up to the rain and seeing a fat orange tabby cat resting against the screen of a second-floor window. The police might already have been here. She'd given them the name of the place last night. Or was it early this morning she'd done that? Maybe that was why it was closed. The owners were being questioned. She'd kept the business card, though, and the other cards, all tucked away in her fanny pack. She slowed at the end of the alley, out of force of habit, and took a quick peek around the corner. The back of the shop was up against another alley, one that was wide enough to drive delivery trucks down and cut through by the back doors of other businesses. Trash cans lined the alley, several of them tipped over and spewing their contents onto the gravel. It reminded her of alleys she'd been down in New York. The smell was just as bad. Smog from the city mixed with the garbage, the predominant odor being spoiled food tossed out by the restaurant, all of it picking up an even stronger scent in the rain. As she slipped around the corner, an oversized rat scurried out of her way and disappeared several yards away in a mound of wilted vegetables. Only one vehicle was in this section of the alley, and Anya crept toward it. An older model Jeep. It was parked directly behind the antique shop, and its tires were caked thick with mud. The top was off the Jeep, and rain pattered against the worn seats. Anya put her ear to the back door, which was painted the same red as the front, and peeling in equal amounts. She heard voices, but they were muffled by the wood and the rain, and she didn't understand the language, though it clearly had an Asian sound. Music was playing to complicate matters from something that had poor speakers. She tested the knob. It wasn't locked. Anya almost didn't go inside. The police should deal with these people, if they were somehow involved in the smuggling. And they most definitely were involved somehow, she knew. The Jeep was evidence of that. It was no doubt one that had been in the mountains when she, Luartaro, and Zakarat had emerged from the treasure cavern. But the police might have already been here and found nothing concrete, or they might already have arrested people. However, it was equally possible that they might not have checked out this lead yet. Anya slowly opened the door. She had to go inside. Her curiosity had won out, coupled with a desire to see the puzzle through. She glided through the door and hugged the shadows thrown by a tall shelf. The light was in the forward part of the room near the door to the shop. It spilled from a wrought iron pole lamp that probably was an antique. A fluted bowl covered with a dusty film shielded the bulb, and the bowl part of it was definitely an antique. It threw a pale yellow light over a man who was scratching at something on a desk, maybe writing in a ledger. Another man, one in his 60s, judging by the gray speckled hair, stooped shoulders, and overly thin frame, hovered over him. Between the man and Anya was a high countertop that had two crates and packing material on it. They looked similar to the ones that had been in the cavern, but crates were crates. She started toward the counter to get a better look, her mind touching the sword, just in case there was trouble. And there would be trouble. Except for a few days spent in the cabin, this vacation had been nothing but trouble. Anya didn't see a weapon on either man, but then she was only getting back views. The radio was on a shelf above the desk. She held her breath and edged forward, listening for the third man, the larger shape she'd earlier seen walk in front of the door and blot out the light. She picked up a sound from somewhere in the shop. The third man was still out there. Scattered in the packing mix were brass figurines the size of lemons, small Buddhas, gazelles, apes, and pigs, some with other metals inlaid in them, and all of them looking old. Anya took another step, preparing to hunker down behind the countertop. One more step. Darkness reached up and swallowed her.
Wake up, Anya Creed.
A man with an expression twisted in anger was standing over Anya. She was in the back room of the antique shop, trussed up in an uncomfortable straight-back chair, her wrists and ankles tied with an electrical cord that dug painfully into her skin. The air was heavy with the residue of cigarette smoke and the papery scents of packing material. A blackened window was open a few inches, and the odors of the garbage in the alley came in with the rain. The older man with stooped shoulders was at the desk, the younger man hovering over him this time. They had her fanny pack and were studying her passport, which was how they knew her name. The business cards she'd had in her fanny pack were crumpled on the floor at their feet. Her backpack sat nearby.
She is the one! I tell you, Kim, this Anya Creed from New York City is the one who killed Doc and Soon in the mountains!
The man leaning over her, Kim, struck her hard on the cheek with his fist.
Anya Creed of New York City. She's a long way from the United States of America, and a long way from our mountains. Why is she here in our shop? Why is she here, so far from the cave she had no business being in? and she has no business being here.
The younger man pointed to the cards on the floor.
She had our card, Uncle. See? She had all of them.
What are you, Anya Creed? Are you a thief? Did you come here to steal from thieves, Anya Creed, from New York City? Are you security? Were you hired to recover some relic that had found its way into my shop? You're not police, Anya Creed. The police were here an hour ago and left us alone. What are you?
Anya tasted blood in her mouth and felt it spill over her lower lip.
What are you?
This time he hit her in the stomach.
An archaeologist. I'm an archaeologist.
Kim took a step back. Behind him, the men at the desk picked through her wallet and looked at her broken camera. She'd kept it rather than toss it, putting the memory card back in, thinking the camera shell would protect the card.
I am an archaeologist. I was in the caves looking for the teak coffins. On vacation, I went to the caves to see the coffins. That I found your treasure was an accident.
Ha! You expect us to believe that? What are you, Anya Creed? A special agent of some government?
The business cards were Dak's, Uncle. I recognize his handwriting. She must have taken the cards from Dak after she killed him.
Kim hit her in the stomach again.
I want to know just what you have learned about our business, Anya Creed. I want to...
She is trained, Uncle. I saw her dance, like Bruce Lee. She had a sword and a...
Kim turned away from Anya and walked into the shop.
The police were here, Sandman, but I convinced them nothing was wrong. I am merely an antiques dealer who struggles to pay his rent. They came in the front and looked through the shop. They did not see the jeep and the crates in it. I have a spy here, one that I am making less pretty by the moment. One who discovered our operation.
While Kim was on the phone, the two other men were futilely trying to get her camera to work so they could call up the pictures she'd taken.
A woman, this spy. My nephew Nang says she was at the cave and killed Sun and Dak with a sword. Nang said there were two other men with her, one dead. I will find out where the last one is, and then I will kill her. No loose ends, Sandman. I will take care of her, my old friend, and I will see you soon. Tell my father I will...
Anya didn't need to see her reflection to know that her face was bruising and swelling. Her legs throbbed and her feet were numb, the cord around her ankles tied too tight. She closed her eyes and concentrated on her sword. She felt the pommel form against her numb hands that were still tied behind her back. She opened her eyes to see the men using a tool on her camera with some measure of success by their happy reactions. The sword held awkwardly behind her. Anya shifted her grip and turned it so the blade was against the cord and the pommel rested on the floor. She started cutting and almost immediately felt the circulation in her hands improve. The cords might have been strong, but they were like warm butter to the ancient blade. The cords fell to the floor, the men not hearing the slight sound because they were so preoccupied with an image they'd managed to call up on the viewer of the camera. Anya brought the sword around in front of her, her sore shoulders practically screaming in protest at being moved. Then she cut the cord holding her ankles to the chair.
Nang! She is...
Free!
Nang tugged open the top drawer and reached inside it as Anya moved forward, turning the blade as she went. She struck the flat of it against the older man's side, knocking the wind out of him. Nang drew an old pistol out of the drawer and with a shaky hand waved it at her.
Kim! She is free! Kim!
With her free hand, Anya yanked the gun out of Nang's hand and hurled it toward the back door.
Down!
Nang dropped to his knees.
I said down!
He flopped to his stomach and laced his fingers behind his head like a thug in a police movie. Kim had come back, his fleshy face contorted with rage.
What are you, a demon?
Anya took a step toward him, sword up.
Where did that sword come from?
Anya rushed into the shop after him. In the light that filtered in through the smudged front windows and seeped in from the back room, she made out tall, elaborate urns and statues of long-legged birds with wings tucked close to their sides. The shelves were narrow and filled with ceramic figurines that looked delicate and valuable and old. She spotted Kim ducking behind a shelf filled with terracotta pieces that could have come from a dig.
Get here now!
Kim turned down another aisle. She didn't hear him anymore, but she saw his shoes at the base of a unit of shelves. He'd taken them off to be quiet. She assumed he'd try to move quietly behind her so he could clock her on the head without warning. She studied the statues against the wall, looking for one that might be breathing. It would be a good place to hide. Nothing. Anya kept her breathing shallow and stepped slowly, careful not to let her clothes rustle or catch against the unfinished wood of the shelves. She reached the end of the aisle, which was near the front of the shop. Holding her breath, she looked around the shelf. Still nothing. A glance at the front windows showed that the grime she'd thought was on the outside was actually on the inside, as if it had been smeared with something to make it difficult to see much. The door had three deadbolt locks on it, and a wire that ran up one side. There was a motion sensor and a security camera that looked pretty high-tech in comparison to the building and its furnishings. Anya retraced her steps, heading to the back of the shop. He'd probably doubled back to the other room. Or else he... A figure holding a sword jumped off the top of a cabinet. Anya leaped away as his blade sliced off a hank of her hair. He landed a solid kick to her arm. She spun away. Anya dropped beneath his next kick. He shifted from one foot to the next, always kicking or punching or slashing and keeping her off balance. Anya backed into a counter covered with brass bells of various sizes. Many of them tipped, momentarily distracting Kim. She jumped up and rolled over the top of the counter. His badly timed sword chop shattered the glass countertop. Anya made a move to slip around the corner, but instead vaulted it. She landed a knee to his chin. Then she hooked her leg around his sword arm, avoiding his blade and setting him off balance.
Don't want to ruin anything.
Priceless antiques. All of these things. New York City spy.
One of his kicks connected with her sore leg.
All of these things more valuable than you, New York City spy.
He swung the sword up high, then brought it down. Anya hooked her blade up at the last minute, snapping Kim's sword in two. He tossed the broken blade behind him and clenched his fists.
A katana from the Muromachi period. Nearly 700 years old! That sword you ruined!
I believe you're the one who ruined it. My sword isn't quite that old, but it's getting there.
Anya would have to finish this soon before the odds worsened. She'd left the nephew's gun in the other room. They moved around each other, looking for an opening.
So you know who I am, and where I am from. Give me the same luxury. Who are you?
Kim Pam.
Where are you from, Kim Pam?
Bac Ninh Province.
In northern Thailand?
Vietnam. Why is this so important? Why does a dead woman want to know about me? A soon-to-be very dead woman.
She glanced to the back of the shop, where Kim's nephew leaned against the doorframe, one hand cradling the side of his head, the other holding the gun he'd retrieved. Huh? Anya dipped down and reversed her grip on the sword. She rammed the pommel into Kim's stomach. The nephew was afraid to shoot for fear of hitting his uncle. He doubled forward, hands clawing at the air. He suddenly gripped her throat in a chokehold and slammed the back of her head against the shelf behind her.
Bitch! That was mean! Look what you did!
She dropped beneath his arms, came up at him from the other side, and kicked him in the groin.
My fault. That's two antiquities you've claimed I broke. You're a thief and a liar.
Anya struck him once more with the flat of the blade.
I've been trying not to break anything.
They continued to parry each other's blows, but Anya was gaining on him, and he was tiring. Finally, she had him at the front door. He aimed his fists at her and charged. Anya dismissed the sword, wanting both hands free. Kim's eyes grew wide when he saw the blade disappear. Anya's uppercut to the jaw sent Kim backward against an old piece of pottery.
All right. That was my fault.
She glanced at the price tag.
But I'm not paying for it.
She grabbed Kim by the shirt and pulled him down an aisle toward the back of the shop.